The following Dharma talk was given by Danika Shoang Ankele Osho at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoan Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, everybody. I was thinking earlier this week about what would be something I would enjoy talking about and would also feel suitable for the occasion, perhaps thematically appropriate, worthy of this august body. So, knowing that words can never reach it, I thought it might be interesting to take up gates. So, we have the eight gates that we've been studying this Ango. And I was reflecting on that and thinking about gate. We talk about the sense gates, gates of entry, the gateless gate. And then I started thinking about Narnia. And that experience that I had as a kid of being read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe aloud to, and being right there when, is it Edmund who opens the wardrobe? Lucy? Thank you. When Lucy opens the wardrobe and this other world is revealed. And we were a little ways into session, so I was kind of feeling like, yeah, totally. For those of us who are here on Wednesday, Roshi opened his talk by saying something like, okay, so we're in. So first, just to give this a solid scriptural foundation, a short passage from the Lankavatara Sutra. Thinking about beings in future ages, Mahamati asked the Buddha, Bhagavan, please tell us about the practices of realization whereby bodhisattvas become great practitioners. The Buddha answered Mahamati, there are four practices, the mastery of which enables bodhisattvas to become great practitioners. And which four? Becoming adept at distinguishing the perceptions of one's own mind, perceiving the non-existence of external existence, avoiding views of arising, duration, and cessation, and delighting in the personal realization of Buddha knowledge. These are the four practices, the mastery of which enables bodhisattvas to become great practitioners. So I would like to consider this first practice today, becoming adept at distinguishing the perceptions of one's own mind. We say gate, gate, para gate, parsam gate, bodhi svaha. the mantra, the great mantra and the vivid mantra at the end of the Heart Sutra, the unsurpassable mantra. And it translates roughly to gone, gone, gone beyond, gone way beyond to the other shore. Svaha. And one scholar I was looking at said, you know, the key word in this mantra is bodhi, which means awakening. And all the other words are modifying bodhi. And gate means gone. And paragate is apparently a stock Sanskrit expression that was used by the Jains and Buddhists to refer to arhats. So gate meaning gone and paragate referring to arhats. And I guess the word para meaning the bank of a river on the opposite shore to the one which you're presently standing on. So it's got those both meanings in one. The arhat, I guess, is named after that other shore, the one who's crossed to the other side of the river. And parasamgate, sam is an intensive, which means completely or thoroughly or altogether. So completely gone to the other shore. And then svaha is from Vedic Sanskrit and is said to be the name of the wife of Agni, the fire god. And it was used at the end of recitations that accompanied burnt offerings as part of like a Vedic sacrifice ritual and meant sort of like amen. So not translated so much as a performative word. And Allen Ginsberg translates the whole thing to gone, gone, totally gone, totally gone over the top, awakened mind, so ah. Okay, so it's story time. So get your graham crackers and apple juice, all of you at home. This is the story of Enid in Zendoland. One unseasonably cloudy and cool spring day, Enid sat slumped on a park bench, holding her head in her hands and feeling especially discouraged about her life in particular and about being a person in general. The problems were myriad. She was stressed out about work, had just had a falling out with her best friend, her new jeans did not fit her right, and her neighbor's apartment was infested with bedbugs. People hurried through the park on their way to who knows what, some pointless job or doomed online date. And other than the pigeons pecking at the scattered crumbs of her lunch, no one seemed to even notice her despair. Honestly, when you added the inevitable sickness, old age, and death to the picture, there just didn't seem to be much point to anything here in the human realm. Enid sighed heavily. Just then, a glossy black crow touched down, edging the pigeons out. It seemed to turn a shining black eye right toward her.
You're late! You're late! It's time to go through the gate!
She could have sworn she heard it say. Great, I'm losing my mind on top of everything, she thought, when she heard another sound.
Psst! Psst!
Enid looked around. There were just some random passersby, their attention glued to their phones.
Psst, over here!
Enid turned and looked behind her. Peering out from behind a gnarled tree trunk a few yards away were a pair of dark, sparkling eyes belonging to a bald head. Enid squinted. An old woman, dressed all in black, holding a tall staff and standing beside a rusty wrought iron gate. She looked distinctly out of place. Medieval, almost.
A witch?
Enid's heart started beating fast. The old woman beckoned.
Well, come on then. We're running a bit late and it's time for Zazen. If we don't hurry, the Zendo will close. Through the gate with you, the old woman said.
She had a pleasant enough smile, though the top of one of her front teeth protruded noticeably.
What? What are you talking about? Late for Zenza? I don't even know.
Are you a witch? Enid blurted out suspiciously, furrowing her eyebrows, which met like a snake across her forehead for a moment.
What's a witch? The old woman said.
Enid hesitated, biting her lip. This could be tricky. Some possible responses flitted through her mind, but they all seemed a bit offensive.
Someone who casts spells, I guess, Enid said finally.
Oh, no then, said the old woman confidently. I'm someone who breaks them. And with that, her eyes locked with Enid's for a moment. And Enid felt a rush of aliveness she hadn't felt in a very long time. Then, nodding briskly, the old woman gave Enid a firm little shove through the gate. After a swirl of light and a tunnel of sound, Enid found herself outside an imposing stone structure at the foot of an ethereal green mountain. The old woman was there beside her, staff still in hand. A blue-gray cat with yellow eyes came running toward them, and Enid knelt down to pet her.
That's Ling Zhao, the old woman said.
Nice to meet you, Ling Zhao, Enid stroked behind the cat's ears, velvet and soft. Then another voice croaked.
It's about time. We've been expecting you.
Enid looked up to see an even older woman, also bald, also draped in dark, flowing robes, poking her head out of a heavy wooden door. She had shaggy eyebrows, wore thick horn-rimmed glasses, and her ancient face was a maze of wrinkles and furrows.
Where am I? Enid wondered.
As if she could read her mind, the old woman with the staff said, Enid, welcome to Zendoland. A shiver went through Enid's body.
I'm Zenshin, and this is my Dharma sister. Dharma elder?
Dharma elder, Zenshin said. Zenzo. The wrinkled woman, in glasses, nodded curtly.
Enid stared.
Wait. Who are you? She asked. If you're not witches, then I suppose you could say we are monks, Zenshin replied.
Better nuns, Zenzo croaked.
Priests, Zenshin suggested.
Buddha ancestors, Zenzo said.
True people of no rank, Zenshin finished. Zenzo nodded. This seemed to settle the matter. Enid blinked a few times. With that, Zenzo and Zenshin disappeared behind the wooden door. And with some trepidation and some excitement, Enid followed. After all, she thought, I have nothing to lose. The first thing that she noticed was the smell. Oh, so familiar, but she couldn't quite place it. It was immediately calming, lightly smoky, a little spicy and sweet, like the smell of a damp autumn forest mixed with her grandmother's closet. The next thing she noticed was that it was dark and very quiet. And although Enid could hardly see, she could feel that there were more than three of them in the space. As her eyes adjusted, she saw she was at the threshold of a great hall filled with people. At least, they seemed to be people. But they weren't like any people she had seen before. They were sitting perfectly still. No one was moving. Not at all. Certainly, no one was talking. No one was looking around or checking their phone, or everyone was just sitting there, upright, awake, still, and silent. Enid had never seen anything like it. "What are they doing?" she whispered. Zenshin considered this for a moment. Then she grinned, her top tooth snagging her lip slightly. "Nothing." Zenzo grunted in assent.
"That is, if they can help it," she chuckled knowingly.
Enid's brow furrowed. "Nothing?" Enid asked, growing curiouser and curiouser. It sure seemed different from when Enid did nothing. All those nights crashed out on the couch, staring into space, rising periodically to fetch a snack from the kitchen, maybe a Twinkie or one of those good creamy yogurts. This was different. So intent. She'd never seen a single person so completely do nothing, let alone a whole room full of people just sitting there, doing nothing. The notion was startling. All that busyness, all that running around with work and promotions and shopping and dating, and here, everyone just sitting so still. She felt her eyes start to well up. A tremble went through her. She looked over at Zenshin, who was watching her closely. "What do you mean by doing nothing?" Enid asked.
"Think non-thinking," Zenzo grunted. "Purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits."
Okay, Enid said.
"Traps and snares can never reach it," Zenzo croaked.
Enid furrowed her brows, the black snake appearing for another instant. "They're practicing," Zenshin interjected. "They're practicing being aware of the breath. Each breath, as present as they can be. And they are watching their minds."
Watching what?
Enid had spent countless hours watching all sorts of things. She had a big screen TV and subscriptions to Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus. There was no shortage of things to watch. But she had never, ever, ever considered watching her own mind. Why would they do that? Or not do that? Enid asked. Zenshin turned to Zenzo, who was stroking her chin, which Enid noted was dotted with several wiry white whiskers.
"Suffering,"
Zenzo snorted. "Suffering?" Enid asked.
"End of suffering," Zenzo clarified.
Enid looked back at the people in the hall, sitting so still. They were watching their minds to end suffering. It felt like the strangest thing she had ever encountered. And at the very same time, it made a certain kind of sense. a certain deep kind of sense. She was more than intrigued. "How does it work?" Enid asked. Zenzo peered over her thick glasses. Her eyes were milky with cataracts, but Enid got the feeling that she could see her perfectly clearly in some other way.
"Mind. Mind creates the suffering. So much struggle. Big tortures and small terrors. All of it mind. Thoughts, emotions, and where are these thoughts? What are they?"
Zenzo paused, as though waiting for an answer. But Enid had nothing to say. What were thoughts, she wondered. She had never thought about it. What were they? Where were they? In her head, she guessed. But somehow, that seemed too obvious. Zenshin picked up the thread, adding, "We're like fish who never ask what is water. We swim in an ocean of thought and emotion. So much struggle. So much suffering. But we may not have asked. We may not have noticed this ocean of thought. We just have our struggles. We believe that's how it is. That's the spell. To break it, we watch the mind. We settle the mind. We get to know the mind, to know its tricks, to know its power. So, like making thoughts go away?" Enid said. Zenzo and Zenshin exchanged glances. This was always the tricky part.
"Sweep as you may, you'll never empty the mind," Zenzo muttered, now her gnarled hand smoothing the white stubble of her head.
But you said thoughts are making the suffering." Zenzo shook her head. "Becoming adept at distinguishing the perceptions of one's own mind," said Zenshin. "It's different from getting rid of thoughts. Distinguishing them. Getting to know them. Recognizing them. Seeing what is a thought and where does it come from."
"Nothing there, actually," Zenzo chimed in. "No problem at all, actually. Sitting still, watching it all, little by little, we can see. Takes time. Lots of time. Habits are deep. Karma is strong. But it can be done."
Zenshin nodded. "So much stronger than we think. But if we can deeply see again and again and recognize that thoughts aren't real in any lasting way, then it's like waking up from a dream." "Or," Enid interrupted, "like breaking a spell." Zenshin nodded. "Yes," she said. "Like breaking a spell." "I want to do it," Enid shouted. "I want to break the spell." Zenzo's eyes seemed to flash behind her glasses, as though sizing Enid up with some other sense beyond vision.
"Difficult, difficult, difficult. To go beyond concepts is like covering a tree with sesame seeds."
"I can do difficult things," Enid countered. Suddenly, Zenzo seemed to tower over her.
"Who are you?" she barked.
"I'm Enid," Enid said.
"Thought!"
Zenzo barked. Enid glanced around. Okay, I'm a project manager."
"More thoughts! Concepts!" Zenzo responded.
Enid tried again.
Well, I'm a mildly depressed woman who stories! Thoughts, concepts, stories, Zenzo interrupted. I'm a, you're making me anxious, Enid blurted. Thought, Zenzo growled. I don't get it. What am I supposed to say? Thought, stop, you're freaking me out. Thought, who are you? Zenzo snarled. Ah! Enid cried out, taking her head in her hands. Suddenly, it was very quiet. Suddenly, the room felt very big. Enid could feel the space around her, soft and velvety. So much space, all the way through. She raised her eyes, as if for the first time she noticed the sunlight coming in through the windows. As if for the first time she heard the sound of the robins outside. They seemed to go right through her. What just happened? Upaya, Zenshin offered, smiling and exposing her snaggle tooth. Skillful means. Enid took a breath. We have to see that thoughts and concepts are empty. We have to see that thoughts and concepts are empty. Perceptions are empty. Perceptions seem different from thoughts, more objective. But if you look closely, they're mixed in and tangled up with thoughts. We believe we are our thoughts. We believe we are our concepts. But it is like being under a spell, Zenshin explained. And it's extremely subtle. For a moment, Enid said, for a moment it was like I was as light as a feather. Zenshin smiled. Yes, for a moment. You see, she said, when we train the mind, we learn to see our thoughts as thoughts. Seeing them this way, we don't have to get rid of them. We just need to recognize them. Things do exist, after all. You are here. You do exist. The question is just how? So, we watch our minds to see how things exist, and in this way, we end suffering. We wake up from the dream. We break the spell. Enid nodded. It was a lot to take in. But still, she felt she had touched something true. The blue-gray cat with the yellow eyes emerged from around a corner, waving her tail in the air. It's a beautiful cat, Enid said. It reminds me of my kitty at home. Thought, Zenzo whispered, this time gently. Enid dropped the idea of her kitty from home. She looked at the blue-gray cat. Suddenly, its sleek blue-gray fur was right there, vivid, pulsing, alive. So, am I not supposed to think? Of course you can think, said Zenzo. Thinking is amazing, Zenshin proffered. It's our most potent power.
It's just that we don't know how to use it. We don't even know that we are using it. And so we're used by it. It's like the most powerful empress in the universe had taken you captive instead of you wielding that power yourself for good. So you see, in the Zendo, we take our seats and we train. Not to get rid of thought, not to stop thinking, but to settle the mind. Yes, thinking can slow down quite a bit sometimes, and that's helpful so that we can recognize the thoughts, so that we can have a break from all that thinking, so that we can pierce the veil, go beyond, enter the gateless gate. All the while, we're becoming familiar with how our thoughts create the world. And then, maybe you can see where this is going. Then we can use them for good.
It takes time, Zenzo chimed in. One thought follows the next, and before you know it, away you go, back to suffering. Difficult, 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 Zenzo murmured.
Zenshin made a soft hum. Easy, easy, easy. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to create. Don't try to get rid of it. Don't try to make it stay. Just let it roll. Enid wasn't sure. At that moment, the blue-gray cat leapt up onto the windowsill, knocking over the vase of grasses.
Ling Zhao always gets the last word.
Well, all this is really just the tip of the iceberg, Zenshin said after a pause. What do you mean? Enid said. This dharma is infinitely subtle and incomparably profound, Zenshin said knowingly. It's boundless and impossible to attain. But for those who want to know, training gives a way to travel ever deeper into the mystery of who we really are. Okay, said Enid. I want to do it. I want to train.
Snorted Zenzo. Then you'll be here for breakfast tomorrow. We're having cake.
Cake? Enid brightened. It's not really cake, Zenshin corrected. It's sweet bread. Behind her glasses, Zenzo rolled her eyes and snorted.
Oh, it's cake, all right. Cake for breakfast every morning. Good Zendo land fare.
Enid smiled. Well, whether we call it cake or sweetbread doesn't really matter, right? I mean, no one's eating concepts for breakfast. And anyway, it sounds delicious. Zenzo and Zenshin exchanged a pleased glance.
You caught a live one, dear sister,
mumbled Zenzo. Nothing better, said Zenshin. Cake for breakfast, then, Enid thought, as she crossed the threshold to the Zendo and tiptoed to take her place among the row. If we get caught in thought, if it feels like one of those sort of, I don't know, bound up moments where whoosh, 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 it feels like, I know I'm thinking, I know I'm thinking, I know I'm thinking, but like, how do I get out of this? I remember once many years ago in Deoksan at the temple. Shugen Roshi said something to me like, well, it's all just working with energy. And I was kind of like, wait, what? And he sort of backed that up. And obviously that stayed with me. When we can feel that, like, I'm caught in thought, there's an energetic tension that's in our body-mind. You don't have to get rid of anything. And aggression will only be a temporary measure, if it even works at all. So it's like what Gokhan was saying yesterday about relaxation. It's like, can we find, you know, there's the tension that we can feel in our body. If you can find that, excellent. That's a great place to enter, to try and just bring your awareness to it and let that begin to soften. And then thought is creating an energetic tension in our body-mind. And that's subtle. That's subtle. But finding that, and then again, same just like with the muscle tension, letting your awareness rest with that and just being still with that. Don't try to make it stay. Don't try to make it go. Just let it roll. The more we can refine that, the more the self-liberative aspect of thought can become part of our own upaya. So first we have to recognize thought for thought. May our practice and effort here be for the benefit of all beings.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.